Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, this is Gail Kim from Impact Wrestling, and you are listening to the 8-Bit Suplex Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition, which could be the regular edition, or at least a regular occurring edition of the 8-Bit Suplex. I'm your host, Josh McLaughlin, of course, and to kind of kick off a new kind of episode that we're going to be releasing, which will be kind of more focused around video game reviews, trying to stick with new releases, but you know, sometimes budget is constrained. Sometimes new games are a little bit difficult to get, whether they be on PC or next-gen consoles. I do have a PS5, so that kind of helps out, but then the money thing comes in. But anyways, joining me today is Jamie the Spectre. Spectre, Jamie, how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so Jamie and I were talking a little bit the other day about kind of Resident Evil and getting caught up with the series as a whole. And Jamie, you had kind of started playing Biohazard, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard a few weeks ago, and that kind of spurned you on to Village, right?
Yeah. It was. I've been a fan of the series. I didn't have a PlayStation growing up. I had friends that had PlayStations and stuff. So like I'd kind of been aware of the series and played a little bit of 2, I think, that just at friends' houses and stuff. But I never really went in on the series until the remake came out on GameCube.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, I ended up procuring a Dreamcast and playing through some Code Veronica, although I never really, but was able to finish that one.
Yeah, that one's kind of weird. So I don't think you're missing out too much on finishing that one.
Well, I enjoyed it. The problem was like those early Resident Evil games, you can kind of like fuck yourself over. Like, if you don't have enough ammo for a certain boss, or you left like you could like screw your save up basically and have to start over.
And back in the days of like before, you know, kids these days they won't recognize, but there was a time where you actually had to manually save your game. You didn't have auto saves and things like that going on. And you'd get yourself to a point you think, okay, I'm gonna save. But then if you didn't save an extra file, you could back yourself into a corner. And back then you had limitations on how many things you could save.
And those games specifically had like this save where you couldn't just save willy-nilly. You had to, you know, get the typewriter ink ribbon. So the saves were purposely like that was a game mechanic. But I'm trying to remember if Code Veronica had that. I don't remember.
I want to say it did. But I mean, it's been many moons since I played Code Veronica, and it's not necessarily one that I necessarily plan on going back to. But if they do a remake treatment like they have for 2 and 3, maybe I'll go back to it. Just, you know, a little bit of history for the series for, you know, maybe if anybody's tuning in that isn't familiar, Resident Evil is a game that was created by Capcom back in 1996 for the PlayStation, as Jamie mentioned earlier. In Japan, it was called Biohazard. And then when it came over here, it is actually switched to Resident Evil, a name I assume is based off of the fact that it takes place in the Spencer Mansion. I didn't play Resident Evil until the port of Resident Evil 2 for the Nintendo 64, which was very clunky.
that's an insane port, though. Like, that port is, but it's like insane, right? Because it has all that full motion video like on the cartridge, which is like wild that they pulled that off on an N64 cartridge.
Yeah, and frame rate drops a lot in that port, and it's very, like, it's very That's clanky. Crazy. So like for me, like I'm similar to you that like my first real deep dive into it did come with that Resident Evil remake on the GameCube, which I remember playing that game at the time thinking like the textures and the graphics that they were able to kind of pull on that game was just something I had never really seen before. Like I felt like it was the best looking game that I had ever played. And a lot of that had to do with the, and we could talk about some of the old, how the controls have shifted
right
over the years, but the tank controls that you had where everything was you moving through a set place, right? So there was no, the camera didn't have to move with you. It didn't have to render everything constantly. The backgrounds were set. And so I think that lent itself beautifully to the early on being higher graphic, better looking games.
Yeah, I mean, I recently played. So when the remake of 2 came out, what was it, a couple years ago now?
About 2-3 years.
I had never actually went and played 2 except for bits and pieces, you know, when I was like 9 years old or whatever on PlayStation. And I wanted to go back and play that remake again, but I didn't have a GameCube. But at that time, I think Steam had it for like $5, like the remake, basically the remastered remake. So, and what was cool was like, you play that and it's like basically the same game. Like they didn't really have to do too much work to it. They just kind of upscaled the pre-rendered background. So it already looked great on GameCube. So just on a HD TV, it works really well and it looks great. And I don't know if you've gone back and played that, the remastered version of the remake, they actually have an option to toggle off the tank controls. So it makes the game so much easier because you could just like turn it off and you can strafe around zombies and it's just like way easier to navigate. And it just makes the game, it kind of takes away from the game a little bit, but it does make for just an easier, more relaxing playthrough. They also have the ability to toggle on or off if you want to use ink ribbons or if you just want to save whenever you want.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of games do that with their remasters, right? Kind of make it a little bit more accessible. Maybe if it's a second playthrough or a third playthrough, like you just want to experience it again. Square does that a lot with their Final Fantasy remasters. Like you can basically turn on a mode that you're like always limit break or enemy encounters, like stuff like that. You can turn on in those to just kind of replay. But no, I actually haven't gone back on Resident Evil and maybe I should at some point because I mean, they're really interesting games and the late 90s, they turned them out pretty quick because you have the original in 96 and then you have 2 in 98, 3 in 99 and then Code Veronica in 2000. So they this became a yearly release for Capcom, just churning these out. And then, 2002 is when you and I kind of start getting into it with the Resident Evil remake on the GameCube. That same year, they also released Resident Evil Zero. And I know that you had mentioned previously that you hadn't played it. I did play through it.
I want to go back to that one,
It's a really, it's interesting, and it only works because of the tank controls. Because you can tank control with two characters on the same gamepad. And so you have two characters that you're controlling in that game. It was interesting. It takes place as the number Zero would indicate, kind of before / coinciding with the events of the first Resident Evil game. So it's pretty good. After that, you don't get another one for several years. So
I was gonna say. Yeah, before you move on to some of the more modern ones, did you ever play any of the weird, like, offshoot, like, PS2? I think there was, like, that online-only one, Outbreak, I think it's what it was called.
I didn't play Outbreak. I think there was one, like, Survivor is, like, another one. That's right around the same time that Code Veronica comes out. I didn't play those. I did play, and this is maybe getting a little ahead of ourselves, but whatever. The Wii had a rail shooter series. The first one was Umbrella Chronicles, and the other one was Darkside Chronicles.
That's right.
Where you basically played through the events of the first few games, but on a rail shooter. And it was, I think, a way to try and capitalize on the Wii hardware and the motion sensors that, and try and resell games that they didn't have to really develop more on, just change it to a rail shooter.
Oh my God. I hope they use some of the live action footage from that first PlayStation release.
No,
they did like an American Laser Games style, like Resident Evil shooter. That would have been so good.
That would have been better than what Darkside Chronicles and Umbrella Chronicles were. because those words were, I mean, if you put the Wiimote into the like kind of zapper holder, like to make it look more like the old Nintendo Light Gun, it was somewhat enjoyable. And if you had, it was two player. So if you had somebody else with you, like, you know, the Wii's right at the cusp of where we stopped playing games together in the same house. So it's, it has its own value that way, but it's not a good game. I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'd rather just go play Time Crisis in the arcade.
But you know. I've always heard, so I never owned a Wii, but I always heard the Wii was like surprisingly like kind of the best way to play four.
Yeah.
I know we're about to talk about that in a second here, but like, because of the way four has kind of that precision aiming mechanic and how that maps to the motion control, I've always wanted to try that. I just never owned a Wii.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about four, but before we move on to that, like there's game staples, like series staples that come from these first four titles, if you include Code Veronica, where you have the tank controls, you have the nemesis type creature, right? We see this play out in later titles where there's an ominous presence, an evil presence that kind of follows you around the game. And if you linger too long, he just shows up. Which for me, as a kid, Resident Evil 3 was a huge no-no because of Nemesis. I couldn't handle it. I was just like, I'm out of here.
Never went in on 3. I just, that remake came out and I never played it. I should probably go and play that one.
But I think it might be on sale right now on PlayStation Store. I don't know if it is on other, I imagine Capcom puts their sales on all platforms. So
I'll wait. I'll wait for like a Steam sale or something.
Yeah, exactly. You could probably get for under $20 at some point, I'm sure. But so we move into that. I kind of split up to 2000 and then post 2000 Resident Evil games. Kind of, I guess post 2002 because of the Resident Evil remake and Resident Evil Zero. But 2005, right at really the end. Of the GameCube and kind of moving towards that next wave of systems, Capcom throws out Resident Evil 4, which most people will tell you is the best Resident Evil game. I think if you're people that are longtime fans of the series,
I get it.
Yeah, it makes total sense, right? It combines what we have now in the present day, which is, and we'll get into this more, a bit more run and gun. And then it also has a lot of, not a complete departure from the tank controls, but it's a much more fluid control, and the camera now is over your shoulder in a true third person view versus those set scenes that we've had the entire way.
Yeah. It's a real interesting, I remember when that was coming out and, you know, that was also like, you know, story-wise, it was a breakaway from like the Umbrella and the G Corporation, at least from the outset, from the slow zombie, you know, I guess they're still slow, but like the traditional zombies to like the weird cult like figures in Spain. It was like a complete departure for the series. And I just remember that being like a huge deal at the time.
Yeah. And that's a good point too. Like at this point we hadn't seen anything but these, you know, basically Raccoon City and seeing the Spencer Mansion and some of the areas around there, basically, you know, cause they try to contain the outbreak, you know, there's nukes involved and all kinds of, you know, fun stuff. Right.
The Resident Evil story is
right. Like, Capcom loves to throw out wild stories sometimes, and Resident Evil is definitely no exception to that rule. But so they're right. You move to Spain, or at least I don't know if they actually say it's Spain, but it's like Spanish countryside, you know, kind of rural, And you are Leon Kennedy, who I believe we see him for the first time since 2 in this one. So he and that's the other thing with Resident Evil is protagonists, they're there and then they're not. So and then I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in the original Resident Evil, I think you can choose between Barry or Jill.
No, it was Jill and Chris.
Was it Jill and Chris? In the
Barry's I thought in the remake it, they changed it. No, it's still Barry and Chris. Okay. I'm sorry. No, Jill and Chris. They're Jill those and Chris. The two.
Okay.
Yeah, they're the two protagonists in the first game. Barry's in the mansion with you, but he's a story character. He's not a playable character. No, the there NPC. Might have been maybe in the remake you could like unlock him as a secret right. character or something, but he's not a he was not a main playable character.
Perfect. Thank you for keeping me on point there, because it gets a little confusing.
It does, yeah. It kind of doesn't matter, to be honest. It's like, whatever.
Right. So, you know, and then number two, you have Claire Redfield, who is the sister of Chris Redfield, who goes to look for him, and that's why she's there. And then Leon Kennedy is in Resident Evil 2 on his first day or so on the job. Hell of a first day on the job to go to Raccoon City and deal with the zombie outbreak. But now we see he's kind of a big to-do in Resident Evil 4. He's sent to Spain to save the president's daughter. And then when he gets there, he finds mutated hosts that have – it's more – this is where we kind of shift more towards the plant-oriented virus outbreak. And we see, you know, what is – I believe to be probably – the hardest first 10 minutes of a Resident Evil game in that first that first village.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. It's heart pumping. It's tense. You don't know the controls yet really at that point.
Yeah.
It's familiar, but it's not. And then like the guys with the chainsaw and the bag over their head come out. It's intense.
I think the first maybe, what is it? I guess the first like couple hours of Resident Evil 4 are probably some of the best opening of any video game. Like, I think that's what sticks in a lot of people's heads and why they like it so much. Cause that opening section is just like incredible. It's
right
so,
up
it's
until so that well lake done. Monster. Like, I think that lake monster is where it kind of, where you're harpooning the lake monster. It's kind of where it kind of takes you a little bit out of that tenseness and into that more kind of, okay, we're going to be doing some more different things here.
Right. Well, I was, that might be getting a little bit further ahead. I was thinking like just up to the chainsaw guy, you know, the guy with the bag on his head and the chainsaw, and you're like moving bookcases in front of the windows. And you kind of, like you said, you're still at that point, you have like barely any ammo. You don't know what you're doing yet. And it's like, it's super intense. But yeah, I mean, that whole game is incredible. Like, it's personally not my favorite in the series. I think I'd probably lean more towards the 2 remake, just for me personally, that type of game. Yeah. But 4 is an incredible game, especially for the time. It was super influential. I think I want to say it was like one of the early games to kind of bring in the like that trend of all of the QuickTime events in like more modern action games, because I remember that happening and it being like kind of a unique thing. I know it wasn't like the first game to do that, but it was definitely like one of the early ones around
it's right there in the
2000s.
And it was definitely the first one to do it in a survival horror genre for sure. I'm trying to think kind of it's like right around that game, it's right around that same time God of War really popularized the mechanics of the QuickTime event. But with Resident Evil, like, you had never been able to like fight zombies off with anything other than a horrible knife action or you know, your limited ammo. And then in this one, now Leon can roundhouse kick zombies in the face. and that was cool. And the entry after that, it gets a little bit ridiculous with the reintroduction of Chris Redfield. Yeah. And 5. And we'll get to that. And I do want to talk about too, Resident Evil 4. It is, you know, you only have the one person to choose from, but it comes out on the GameCube originally, then it's ported to the Wii with motion controls, and it's wildly popular there. And then they also ported it to the PS2. And now they're
Go ahead. That's why I played it on the PS2. Yeah.
Okay. So you have that, and then you have, Obviously, a PC version.
Every console.
Yeah, it's on the digital. It's on the digital store now for everything.
It's on Switch.
Yeah, they put it on Switch for the Nintendo eShop. And then it also is getting remade in VR. So for like the Oculus and things. So, I mean, Capcom's getting a ton of mileage out of this game. And rightfully so. It's a really good game to kind of keep on reimagining. And I'd hope that they don't do a full remake like they have with 2 and 3 for a while on this one.
I think it's inevitable. I think it's that'll inevitable. Happen.
But I just hope it waits a little bit. Just because they've done so much. I mean, listen, I'm gonna buy it, Jamie. I just am. It's whenever it happens, it's gonna be a buy it for me. Like,
I mean, the remakes have been. I mean, I haven't played the three remake, but two was awesome. So and I guess the first going back to the GameCube, the Resident Evil 1. So I mean, Capcom has a really good track record of making really good Resident Evil remakes. So
they absolutely do.
I'll definitely play a 4 remake.
Yeah, so and we get kind of now to this point where Resident Evil, it's not a yearly release anymore, obviously. The time between 0 and 4 was 3 years. Now we get four years in between a main numerical title. Of course, the aforementioned Umbrella Chronicles comes out in this span as well because the Wii needs some games to, you know, utilize motion controls for whatever reason. But then there were
some portable games, correct?
There are some after five. Well, so I mean, I'm kind of skipping around some of the Game Boy. I think the first handheld Resident Evil game was a game on Game Boy Color, which I mean, survival horror on a Game Boy is just not going to be a thing,
well,
right?
I guess I was jumping right ahead to DS and PSP at this time, like between 4 and 5. I think there was like a PSP, like Revelations or something.
Revelations comes out later, so that comes out after 5, and so does the Mercenaries 3D, which is a playoff of a really popular game mode that I believe originates in 4. I believe
4
when Mercenaries starts
in 4.
So we have 5 next, and I don't know if you remember, Jamie, how much controversy was kind of surrounding 5. Because it does take place now in Africa for the first time in the series.
Right.
And there was a lot of like, wow, you're just kind of running through slaughtering African villages. And there was not a whole lot of, like, the first trailer didn't really show them like affected by the virus as much. So it really just looks like you were just Chris Redfield white manning it up through African villages. And there was,
I do remember that. I remember that in the trailer making a big deal out of like, it's in the daytime. Look how bright it is. Like,
right.
That was also a big part of the game.
Yeah. So this is where Resident Evil, like Capcom has this idea that they want to kind of push this into horror action more so. This game, I don't remember playing 5 ever like needing ammo. Ever.
Did you play 5 co-op or did you play it yourself?
I played it solo.
Man, that is definitely not the way to play. This is one of those games where that makes it's such a big difference, like in the quality of the experience, because I played it maybe like halfway through by myself and I was like, this kind of sucks. Like I wasn't into it. Just because the AI of the co-op character was like not great.
It's horrible.
Like, managing 2 inventories, it just wasn't fun. But as soon as you play with another person, it just like it makes it much better. It's a it's probably, I should go back and try to play a co-op again. And
you have to find someone that will play co-op with you, but that also has the game still. I mean, you do have Chris Redfield back in this one, and then a character that's used quite literally once in this game, and I don't believe she's brought back. At least I don't remember her being brought. She might have been in 6. I don't remember. Man, I really don't remember 6.
Sheva. I never played 6.
I think Sheva was only in 5. But I maybe I'll correct myself when we get to talking about 6, and we won't really spend much time talking about 6 because there's she's not in 6. I just checked. because I skipped that one. Jamie, I played that game all the way through, and I don't remember much of it other than it just being bonkers, right? So
but just to
put a bow on a Resident Evil 5, it became the most memed Resident Evil, because during the end game portion of it, when you're fighting Wesker, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, Chris Redfield can literally punch boulders. And it was just like, at no point in Resident Evil was it ever kind of like thought that the protagonist had any kind of special powers or abilities or anything, like, because they were just normal people trying to save the world from this, you know, this madman and this corporation, right?
The progenitor virus.
Right. Right. So, but, you know, it's like literally like mash the A button, and it's not like he pushes the boulder. He literally pulls back and just like throws a right hook at a boulder and knocks it away. It's strange.
It's real dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. But. So,
but
critically, critically speaking, like, you know, the critics really like, this is kind of where Resident Evil hits a really rough couple of years as far as the critics are concerned.
It kind of was like an identity crisis.
Everyone
loved 4 so much, but then like 5 is kind of mixed, because I think the co-op, it is a very fun co-op game, but a lot of the things that you had mentioned with like the boulder punching and the just how off the rails it is in terms of like, is it this a survival horror? Is this action? Right. What is, I don't even know what this is.
I mean, it's borderline a superhero game at the end. I mean,
basically, it
becomes that. But yeah, so, I mean, there's so much pressure, I think, too, from 4 being so successful, everyone loving it. It's getting perfect scores in Game Informer. It's getting perfect scores in every publication, major publication. And then you have Umbrella Chronicles. Nobody likes it. You have Resident Evil 5. Nobody likes it. I mean, it's kind of rocks in those like 6 and 7s, right? That's where it kind of starts getting.
I think some people like it was fine. It was like, compared to some of the high points of the series, compared to 4, I guess, certainly it was like, this is a letdown. But
yeah,
I don't think 5 is a bad game.
No, I don't think it's bad either. But it definitely takes a turn, because this is where Capcom thinks, okay, maybe the problem isn't that we left the survival horror part of it. Maybe it's the problem that we didn't do enough action. And that winds up being the absolute wrong thought. because before we even get to 6, in the same year actually that 6 comes out, we have a squad-based third-person shooter with Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City.
I've never heard of this.
It's a game that like everyone's like, oh, this could be interesting. And then the second it was released, everyone's like, no, not interesting at all. And in fact, it's very boring. But this was Capcom trying to capitalize on like the success of Gears of War, of similar, you know, kind of, you know, third person squad based shooting. So it definitely was an attempt at something different, but being wildly unsuccessful. And speaking of wildly unsuccessful, we're at Resident Evil 6 now, Jamie.
Before you say anything, because this game is kind of like infamous of just being pretty terrible. Just like, this is a widely regarded like just bad game. Correct me if I've never played it, so it's like I don't want to personally say that, but just from all I remember when that came out, I was very excited about it, and just because they were. I don't know if you remember the marketing for it. They're like, we're gonna wrap up the story. Leon is back. We're bringing back all the old characters. And it's like, they're like, we're going to have some old Resident Evil in some sections. We're going to have some new Resident Evil. And so they tried to do like everything. And then I remember some of those early reviews coming out and be like, oh, I don't need to play this. This
looks real bad. Yeah. So here's the weird part, right? I remember too that one of the big things was it was like, oh, Resident Evil's going global, because it takes place, the game takes place everywhere on the globe at the same time. And so Leon, so there's 3 different campaigns. The Leon campaign, you have the more traditional survival horror type game. Then you have the Chris Redfield storyline, which is just straight up run and gun. Like, it is okay. straight up an action game. And then you have a Jake Mueller campaign. Now, you may ask yourself, who's Jake Mueller? And you'd be well within right to do that. He's the bastard son of Wester, who's just randomly a good guy. He's, you know, he's not a part of the series before. He's not a part of the series after, which sucks because, you know, he is voiced by Troy Baker, who is a great voice actor. But yeah, you have, you know, it's three campaigns. It's, they try to weave them in and out of each other. It's an ambitious attempt.
Josh, if I go into this saying like, okay, I know this is a compared to the, I guess, pedigree of what Resident Evil could be and kind of got back to at a certain point. If I kind of go into this, like knowing that, hey, this is kind of a trash game, like, will I still have fun with it at least?
I think so. When you look at Resident Evil games, we always, and myself included, we always tend to look at the series as a whole and say, where does this one stack rank within the series? Whereas if it's not tied to Resident Evil, if we just say this is a game that happens and it's a global zombie apocalypse that you're trying to stop, and there's shooting, there's parts where you have to sneak by, or maybe you're scarce on, you know, resources, I think it's fine. The individual parts work. The parts as a whole do not, if that makes sense. So right. You have three incomplete campaigns instead of just the way I would have liked them to approach it instead would be you play one campaign and then you each mission is different people that you're controlling versus having three separate campaigns. And you have to play through all of that campaign with that character and then you play through all of that campaign as the other character. And then if you're still haven't given up, you play through the third campaign with the,
That's so interesting. Cause I think one of the, at least when I think about Resident Evil, at least from some of the better games, like 4 to the first game, like the even some of the newer games that we'll get to in a second. One of the best parts I think about the series as a whole is the pacing of it. Like they're so well paced. Like 4, we didn't talk about it really, but like it slogs a little bit, but I feel like for the most part it's just a very tight game. Like that's one of the things I like about 8 so much. It's just so it's so well paced.
The pacing in 8 is great.
It seems like 6 kind of broke that a little bit.
Yes.
Trying to split everything out, and that sounds frustrating.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. The good news is that Capcom learns from this, right? Mm-hmm. Not before we get Revelations 2 as a follow-up to Revelations, and not before we get another, you know, tactical shooter, Umbrella Corps. But then we kind of see Capcom say, okay, how do we do the survival horror that everyone wants? And how do we make it in a way that is fresh and new and, you know, welcomes in new players and old players. And then, you know, we get Resident Evil 7, which is, you know, got the subtitle Biohazard. I think it's interesting because now you're controlling a protagonist that you've never seen before, and Ethan Winters, and actually you, a protagonist that you don't see, which is unusual. But you are now in a first person, shooter. And I think that was a move at the time that everyone was like, why are they doing first person? But I actually really enjoy it.
I think when I remember seeing some of the early footage of it, this is like, I thought it was pretty smart because I think Capcom was like we talked about the identity crisis, and especially after 6, it's like, what is Resident Evil even these days? And Capcom took a hard look at kind of the current state of survival horror at that point. What was it, 2017 that came out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking the PT phenomenon, which was all in first person, Outlast, Amnesia, these types of games that are just kind of came out from PT, not so much, but some of these more indie titles that were first person. They were more about you have no weapons, you've got a flashlight, you're managing batteries, you're managing like the lighting and stuff, and it's just getting back to the roots of pure survival horror, less right. like barely any action. Amnesia, you can't even fight back, I don't think, in that first game.
No, I don't believe you can. I want to ask this before we get too far on. Did you play the demo for 7 before 7 came out?
I didn't. It was one of those things that I was like planning on doing, and I just like never did. didn't get around to it.
It was really cool because it was unique in the sense that it was a demo, yes, but it's none of it takes place in game.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so PT basically.
Basically, right? Yeah, exactly. So you are a film crew, or you're a part of a film crew that goes to check out this house in Louisiana,
right?
And so you go through this whole thing, and then, you know, the end of the demo winds up as the main villain of the game takes you out. And then I guess there's an Easter egg in 7 where you can actually watch the footage of what that film crew caught before they got taken out.
Did you played 7 when it came out, right?
Or years ago. Yeah. It's not fresh on my mind.
Right. So, I mean, that that became like kind of a core game mechanic. You're finding these videotapes and then having to watch them throughout the game. They're kind of peppered. It happens a few times, and I thought that was super interesting, and it's a mechanic they didn't really bring back for 8. I guess the setting didn't really make sense, but
no. And they didn't do the demo that way either. Like, and that's like tying your demo into the main game that way is, it was a good way, I think, to get everyone used to the mechanic. It was a good way to get a story reason to do it, and not ruin the fact that, like, you were Ethan here, but you're not there, but you never were.
Yeah.
So we get into this the Winters family storyline here with Resident Evil Biohazard or Resident Evil 7. It starts this new convention of naming where they're kind of phased.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Out the numbers kind of Resident Evil 8 most they people just thought Resident Evil Village right exactly
yeah.
and actually with 7 if you look at Resident Evil the font is in white until the VII is in orange signifying the 7 so it is Resident Evil 7 Biohazard just like this is Resident Evil Village but the VILL of course would be the Roman numeral 8.
I thought it was cool because 7 is kind of a soft reboot, so to speak.
Yeah.
I liked how they, in Japan, it's called Biohazard: Resident Evil. In the U.S., it's Resident Evil. Cool. I'm like, that's interesting. That's they did it. That's I thought that was creative.
It definitely is, especially since these games have all been Biohazard over there, so it doesn't make any sense for for them to have a game called Biohazard 7 Biohazard.
Yeah.
There's crazier names for games in Japan, I'm sure. So
what were your thoughts on 7 overall?
It's really good. I feel like it's definitely back into the scarier portion of the series. there's a lot more tense, like walking through the house and walking, you know, some of these different settings. Village kind of takes a step back away from the scary stuff, in my opinion, mm-hmm. With the exception of one major small part. But Seven, I think it's pretty good. Right. I wouldn't put it above four in my mind, as far as like favorites. Cause I kind of buried the lead earlier, but four is kind of my favorite, of the series as well. As I know it's a very, you know, not unique opinion. But yeah, no, I think that Seven really does, like you said, soft reboot in a very good way, in a very good game, and sets us up to where we are now at Village. And then also where Resident Evil 9 will be kind of in the future as well.
Right.
And introduces more of a supernatural element to what's happening versus, you know, in the past it was always Umbrella Corporation with the T-Virus. And there's, so now it's a little bit different.
It's kind of, yeah, they still tie it back to a, it's still a virus at the end of the day.
Like, right, the mold, yeah.
The mold, but I definitely thought, I think Seven is like the most like creepy of all of the games. Now, like even up to eight, it's still like the, like just from start to finish, it's like the creepiest title out of all of them. But it's still like, what's cool about it is even though like on the outset, you look at all these things like moving to first person, it being a creepier tone, you're kind of dealing with like one core group of villains rather than like all of like, you know, different types of like bosses and stuff throughout or whatever,
right?
Like the family, like it's a completely different depart, like it's a big departure for the series. But like then when you start playing, you're like, oh, and then, you know, in the beginning it's like amnesia where you're hiding from Jack Baker and like, right, you don't have any like weapon, you can't fight him because he's invincible, so you're like hiding from him. So it's like, okay, this is like their take on amnesia or whatever. And then you start playing it more and it's like you're finding dogs' heads and you're having like, you're having to hold up like wooden falcons up to shadows to open doors in this, right, like random Louisiana house. It's like, okay, this is still Resident Evil. Like, right, you walk into the save room and it's got like the Resident Evil 1 like calm music because you're invincible in the save room with the,
right,
like they did such a good job of kind of like walking that line of like, this is a complete departure, but then also as you play the game, they start bringing in like more and more elements. And then by the end of the game, like you're meeting up with Chris and
yeah, I was like, gonna say, like it doesn't even feel like it's in the same universe at times.
Right.
Until you kind of, and then next thing you know, Chris Redfield's there.
Yeah, exactly. And then tying in like where the biohazard component, cause like, yeah, up to then it's like, this could be supernatural. Like, I don't know what's the deal with this family. Why am I seeing this like creepy? Do you remember the grandma of the family? You know, without getting into spoilers, she just like randomly shows up, mm-hmm, in places of the house, and you're like, what is up with this grandma?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. And it's kind of that. It kind of brings up like almost that a callback to that old Nemesis game mechanic, right? Where like, you know, you just randomly, and I think Jack Baker does, he shows up randomly too, to kind of walk around the house. And it's just like,
yeah,
like seven definitely puts you on that tightrope of emotion. Like that you're just like, what's around the corner? I don't know. Like,
yeah.
So it definitely sets you up to, I think, really experience Village. And it's really like, to me, And I don't know if you are on the same page here, like these feel definitely not just because of the same protagonist, but the two most closely related games as far as the story goes, even though they're all numerically in order, these actually feel in order.
Right. This feels like if they're going to be following up on Village in whatever next game that they do, like this feels like a basically almost like a self-contained trilogy that's a part of the wider fabric of the Resident Evil lore, so to speak.
Yeah. So from what I understand and what I've read, the Resident Evil 9 will be a part of the same, you know, Winters family.
Okay.
Obviously, without getting into spoilers, it will be a different playable character. Mm-hmm. And from like what I appreciate too about this is that Capcom took these three games 7, 8, and then 9 and kind of map them out ahead of time, which I don't think that they necessarily have done with their previous numerical releases for the series.
Oh, definitely not.
So, you know, like 9 started production in 2018. So they had no idea what was going to happen with the reception of Village. Mm-hmm. But they were working on these games simultaneously. So I assume probably 22 or 23, late 22, early 23 is probably when we'll see Resident Evil 9. But at that point, it'll be in production for almost 5 years, which is not something they normally do with Resident Evil. So I expect a pretty damn good game if they're going to spend that much time on it.
And the engine that they have running for these newer next-gen Resident Evil games, you know, I think starting with 7, and then they iterated on it in 2 and then 3, the remakes. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to 8, it's like, I mean, I had some issues on PC, but it's like very, I feel like it's very polished. It's a really good engine. They're able to do a lot with it.
And this is a good kind of segue into Village in general, because you played it on PC, I played it on PS5. Did you have any frame rate drop when there was like did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Noticeably when in the early part of the game, when you're in the, was it Domitress, the castle?
Lady Dimitrescu's castle.
Yeah. Yeah. You're having to fight the three daughters, the fly daughters.
Yeah.
That was pretty resource intensive.
It was. No, it definitely was.
Frame drops.
Yeah. No, like I didn't have too much of that on the PS5 actually. Even like in there was times where like, you know, like 30 Lycans are like trying to take you out and you're like mm-hmm. trying to like run and gun. But no, I from what I can tell, at least from my experience on the PS5 and with what I've read on the PC and your own account, like for the most part though, the game performs pretty well despite what it's pushing fine. Out. You know.
Yeah, and to be fair, I was running this at like pretty high settings with like ray tracing on in like 120 FPS. I'm trying to do like, I've got an OLED. I'm trying to do like everything to the max. So definitely had some issues there, especially with this latest batch of NVIDIA drivers. It's probably, I don't know how much is the drivers, how much is game optimization.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know either. And PC's, you know, I am not a big PC gamer. I never really have been. I've been more so in the past. I'm not sure what settings they're running stuff at now that would be comparable to what the PS5 is putting out. But I think I played the default was, you know, 30 frames per second with ray tracing. So it was pretty smooth, pretty good gameplay. Unfortunately, right now, the display that I'm playing it on, my PS5 on right now, and it's a total waste, it's just a 1080p TV. My 4K TV is currently in storage. So which I've like contemplated like pulling it out just to put it on because like I'm like it's killing me. And now I'm playing like the new Ratchet and Clank game Rift Apart, and then that game is just absolutely gorgeous. This game Resident Evil Village looks gorgeous, you know.
It's
very like it hurts your hands to play it just from the visuals. Not anything that the game's doing, but like early on, like maybe just say like, you know, the fact that Ethan Winters continues on despite everything that happens to his hands, let me tell you.
Well, I think I understand the choice. Like it is kind of a meme, I guess, at this point, and it's a little silly, but it's like when you're in first person, how do you show like, oh, look how much punishment the character's taking. Like,
and also,
only thing you can see is your hand.
Right. And it also too kind of points to what is revealed in game, spoiler alert, where and I will talk a minor spoiler here. Well, I guess not really a minor, but somewhat major spoiler here, is that, you know, we find out that Ethan is basically a mold man who dies in the events of 7. And so like the part where Dimitrescu slices off your hand and you go and you take it and you kind of like screw it back on. I was like, all right, this is kind of weird. I didn't put two and two together that was happening.
Right.
And the game was trying to tell us that the whole time.
It's not very well explained, like, the way the mold works. It's like, sometimes you turn into a weird poop monster, sometimes you're like a giant vampire lady. Like, I don't it's Resident Evil. It's just going to be like, I don't know, there's a, it's a bioweapon, like,
right?
And then they just do whatever they want. Right. Like,
it's like, oh, you're the perfect toast. So
yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's like, yeah, and it's thrown in the middle of a game where you think you see your wife shot to pieces, your daughter, your baby, your infant daughter gets kidnapped right off the rip. So, you know, I have kids. That's a chord that strikes with me like immediately, right? Like, I'm like, okay, gotta get that kid back. And then after that,
it was Chris Redfield that took the kid.
Yes,
shoots up your wife.
Yes, and so that's like the huge, like, what the fuck? Like, you're just like
your bioterrorist wife,
right? Exactly. So it's all very, very strange. And then, yeah, I mean, it puts a nice bow on kind of the events of Seven throughout Village, and especially at the end, and it sets up Nine very nicely. And it does leave you kind of thinking, like, you know, what kind of happens between Eight and then the end credit scene of Eight and then into Nine, where they go from here. But yeah, I mean, for me, and I want to get your thoughts kind of like what your favorite dungeon was, because this is a bit of a linear game, but you do have a hub world that expands it after each thing, giving you the ability to go and get additional items. I do really enjoy, I didn't enjoy Dimitrescu's castle that much because I hate the nemesis mechanic. but I think probably for me, I actually really enjoyed the last dungeon, which is the metal guy. I can't remember his name.
Heisenberg.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the puzzles and the going of the different floors. And it was a bit more survival horror kind of thing. There is a dungeon, the second dungeon's pretty much a straight horror. There's no combat in it at all. And I thought that was interesting too. But what was kind of your favorite?
I think the second one was my favorite. It was definitely the most like memorable out of all of them. It was just, I played PT and it was like, I was super stoked for that game. I was like, this is super creative. It was terrifying. Just like the way in these first person games where there's like a photorealistic long creepy hallway, and you just have to walk forward. Like, we're gonna see this. I think this is gonna be in like every horror game that's first person, like, because it's very effective. It's like,
it is.
And you have to, and just the way PT utilized that, and you're kind of going in a loop, and then weird creepy stuff happens. It seemed like that second area in Village was like straight out of that playbook, you know, going through those hallways and stuff.
Your first thoughts when you saw that fetus monster?
The fetus monster. I was just like, all right, this is like, you know, like, cause leading up to it, when you first walk into that house, and it's like, no, there's no enemies. You're just kind of walking around. There's really not much to collect in terms of items, which is pretty rare for at least this game. Like, there's items everywhere. And it's real creepy, and there's long hallways, and it's like, okay, this is going to be, in my head, I'm just like, something's going to be chasing me when the lights are off, and I'm going to have to like go through all these areas again. And like, it was good. It was they like build to, there wasn't a ton of like cheap jump scares really. Like, it was just real creepy, and it was just very effective. It was like, this is what I want. This is what I want the Silent Hill series to be. I'm hoping they can get to that level again. Who knows? I don't even know what the deal is with Konami these days, but
Well, PT originated as a demo for a Silent Hill game. So
Silent Hill game.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see kind of what Konami comes out. I wish that they could get on the same page.
Now that said, yeah, absolutely. But like that said, like, I really like the way Village kind of broke that up, because I don't know if I could play like a 11, 12 plus hour game where the horror is like that intense all the time. Like,
no, I agree.
So I loved that it was like this self-contained, you know, area, and then you're on to the next one. You're shooting werewolves in the face, and it's you're fighting a metal man. Like it's
right.
The game is built like an amusement park, like where you're kind of like in that hub world in the village, which remind me a lot of Resident Evil 4, which I'm sure was intentional. Again, the game opens very similar to kind of Resident Evil 4. You're like going to this village. You're like, what the hell is, what's the deal with all this? It's not exactly the same, which I'm glad they didn't just try to do it the exact same thing again, because you go to the village and like nobody's there, and you're like, you're seeing all this fucked up shit everywhere, and you're like, what's going on?
That old man with the shotgun.
Yeah, and then it leads to that big giant with the hammer and like kind of chasing you off. So I was like, I thought that was really like interesting way to start the game. And you're just kind of like, why am I like in, why is there a castle? Why am I suddenly in Transylvania? Like, just, it's so like weird, like going from, cause I played 7 right before going into 8. So I'm like playing these back to back, and it's just like being the same character, and the character's just like, what the hell's going on? Like,
yeah, the inner monologue of Ethan Winters is a delight in this game too.
Yeah.
There's a couple of lines that he says that are just like at one point, like somebody like dies. He's like, why does everyone keep dying?
Yeah. He's a huge dumbass. I think 8 is like one of the best, like most well-paced games out of all of them. Maybe since the 2 remake, maybe probably better paced than 2, I would say. Just, it's like an amusement park. You start off in that village. It's like a hub world. You kind of go into that castle, like you said, and it's similar to the Baker family, where you're running away from the daughters and the main villain. And then, but you're never in it too long. Like, even if you're not a big fan of that, like hide and seek type of gameplay, which
no. I mean, it's not my favorite. Like an hour or so in Dimitrescu's castle. It wasn't overdone.
Yeah, and I thought the like interior just looks so good on PC and next gen consoles, like just the way everything looks, because it's such like a disconnect from 7, where everything is like a, you know, deteriorating like old creepy house, and now this is like you're in this like beautiful castle, everything's glistening and stuff, and then you go into the basement and stuff, but I think the third one, where it's like kind of that swamp, was probably the least fish person. Memorable. Yeah. That was like the least memorable, but what was cool is it wasn't a super long dungeon. Like really, of in that cave for a hot cup of coffee, and then you're like almost immediately in that boss fight. Not too long after that. I really liked the kind of like cyber goth, that's not even the right word. It reminded me of like being in Quake or something. Me of like Doom 3. It reminded me of Doom 3 playing in the Heisenberg factory, like
those chainsaw guys were pretty intense. And definitely used like your shotgun ammo like crazy. I mean, everything, like you said, it flows really well. It doesn't, you don't overstay your welcome with anything, right? Even like the beginning, before you even get into Dimitrescu's castle, you have some villagers that you find, and then, you know, one guy starts to turn and it starts a fire in the house, and shit just goes crazy. And, you know, there's a human element to it with Ethan and having him just kind of have that inner dialogue. One similarity to 4 that I did want to bring up was that we do have a merchant in this game, the Duke. And I found the Duke to be a pretty interesting character. He's more important to the story than the Resident Evil 4 merchant, who you don't really ever find out what his whole deal was.
I thought he was Leon at first. Like, I thought that was like the big reveal, that Leon just suddenly got fat and like he's this, because he kind of looks like him a little bit, and I thought that was going to be like the reveal, like. But maybe that's just a dumb fan theory. But then I Googled it, and nobody thinks that. So maybe I'm.
Maybe it's just you. Yeah, I never had that thought either. But that's okay. That's it. They leave it open to our interpretation about who the Duke actually is, and also what actually happens to the Duke. We don't know. So it's an interesting shot mechanic. And then there's also like you can get some permanent boost if you like do some hunting, which I didn't realize I could do that. I accidentally sold some fish early on, so I couldn't like max out my stats.
Can you not buy them back?
You cannot.
I read about that before. I was that was one of the things I heard about the game. Like, hey, don't sell any of your
sell your hunting stuff. I found that out the hard way. Because you cannot. It's the only items that you can't buy back.
It's real dumb. Like, it's real dumb that they don't tell you that or whatever.
Right. But, or let you buy it back. Like I would have bought it back at a premium because like one of the things that I screwed up was that, you know, I was unable to walk faster or move it faster. So
yeah, I don't think I ever did that one either with the fish, but whatever. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Right. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just, it was a cool system. I hope that in nine, it's a little bit more ironed out and they don't, you know, make you sell your hunting items into the void.
Yeah. It reminded me about, it reminded me of some of the Far Cry hunting stuff. Just a very, very like light version of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
no, that's a good comparison. Certainly.
I guess the difference is there's a limited Far Cry. It's all kind of like you might see a wildebeest spawn over here and you can get whatever materials, and here it's like there's specific locations or whatever.
Right. So and they do not come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's strange. It like I said, it's something new that they tried. They're trying to, you know, kind of change up their systems a little bit, add some progression. I did find like, there was like a throwaway line early on in the game where like Ethan's talking about how he got training from Chris Redfield in case, you know, somebody ever came after them. And then next thing you know, he's still moving like painfully slow. Yeah. He's so slow moving. Like, I guess we're supposed to know like, oh, he's got training now. That's how he knows how to like shoot better than, you know, he did in the, but I don't think that was a problem in the last game. So I don't know. It was a weird throwaway thing. And then, you know, now he can't sprint unless he, you know, eats a special fish dish made by the Duke. So I don't know.
Yeah, you're not really supposed to think about that stuff too hard.
It's, I know, but I have to, you know.
Resident Evil is a video game ass video game. Like
it, no, it definitely is.
It's what I like about, I really like that about that series. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Even in 7, where it's like, when they're like kind of, you know, leaning more into, I guess, realistic quote unquote horror and things, it was still some Resident Evil ass shit by the end of
right,
the game.
Right. They just can't help themselves. They have to go full Capcom at some point.
I love it.
And it's it's what makes them unique, right? And in the same way, I mean, Silent Hill would always go full Silent Hill. But yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean, we talked about most of what has kind of gone on with Village and what, you know, the Ethan Winters thing, and we'll see kind of what happens with I believe is the kid's name Rose.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So we'll see what happens. You know, with Rose and potentially you know, the rest of the gang. You know, Redfield is obviously still involved, and we'll see kind of how it goes from there. But we just, you know, kind of a like an overall you know, how many zombies out of 10 would you give this one?
I don't know. I'm so bad at like rating things on a scale like that because there's just so much. Here's what I'll do. I'll tell. It's probably my third favorite in terms of experience. I liked 8 better than 7. I think I've read. I see why some people would put 7. Above 8 in terms of like it's a more cohesive in quotes. If you actually look at the plot of that game, it goes way off the rails. But I guess in terms of like the location and how it commits to its setting and everything, so I can see why people like 7. I think 8 is a better game. I think 8's just a more fun, better game to it personally. But I'd probably put the 2 remake first. 4 below that, then 8, then 7, then probably the one remake below that, and then the rest of the games, whatever, you can take your pick.
Yeah, but, right. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to argue with that list, certainly. Yeah. But I'm gonna go 8 zombies, since it's Resident Evil 8.
Okay, yeah. I'll go 8 zombies as well. That makes sense. Now, real quick before we wrap things up here, do you think they go back to this kind of schedule where instead of jumping right into 9, they go for another remake, whether it be a Code Veronica remake, which we kind of touched on early on, or going right to 4? I think they should do Code Veronica, because 4 is very playable on modern consoles.
Yeah, 4 is really available too. Like, that's the other thing, right? Like, 4 also has had some HD remaster stuff for the like virtual consoles, just like, you know, cleaning up, you know, some cells here, some cells there. Not like a full overhaul remake. Code Veronica is pretty tough to play. Like, it's very the original controls. You can't really remaster a PS2 Dreamcast game, right? I mean, it's very hard. Right. Some people have done a pretty decent job of it. Square does a pretty good job with like their PS2 era, like Final Fantasy games. But other than that, like, I haven't seen PS2 games really. But those games had high-end graphics to begin with for the era. Like, Code Veronica was kind of, you know, blocky still back in those days.
Right. I also don't think 4 needs a full-on remake, because the way that game, it still plays fairly modern, right? And you don't really need to, whereas you could go back to a Code Veronica and you could change things up with the story, with, you know, because the with the cutscenes, you could kind of add things, take things away. I don't know if you really need to do that with 4 too much.
No, I don't think you do. Yeah. And because to your point, even like the cutscenes in 4 still hold up. I don't watch them and go, ugh. You know, like this game that you from especially from the GameCube era and that GameCube, PS2, Xbox era, where you're like, oh, that's what we were playing. But no, the GameCube visuals, the GameCube visuals and the PS2 visuals still hold up for 4, certainly.
Right. Whereas if you play like the 2 remake versus like 2 on PS2 or PS1 or N64 is where you played. Like they're like completely different games. Like, it's not like they just took a filter and made the graphics better. Like, they like wholesale completely redid everything. And I think people would probably be upset if you did that with 4, right? Like,
I agree.
It'd be like, people, 4 is such a beloved game. Whereas 2, there's a lot of room for interpretation because it was just they're working with PS1 limitations.
Right. Or porting to 64 limitations. But yeah,
that I will go on record and say that I should try playing that, just because that port is, it's very impressive that they were even able to pull that off. Like, that's insane.
In an era where Nintendo started to take hits from third-party developers for using cartridges, it was interesting to see that I believe they also ported Nemesis to the 64 as well, but it's a much harder cartridge to find, because they did not make many of them. But even then, the Resident Evil 2 cartridges for 64 are still like, you pay basically what you paid full retail for back in like 97, 98 for them.
Holy cow.
Which is insane. I want to say the last time I saw a Nemesis cartridge, no, it was a Nemesis remake for GameCube. That port, it was just a straight port for the GameCube that I saw.
Right, because when the remake and Zero came out, didn't they do almost like a Zelda Master Quest situation where they had one of those mini discs with 2 and 3 on it?
Yeah, okay. Yep. I think that's what it was. You know, the corrections department will issue a statement if that's not the case. But yeah, no, I mean, Resident Evil, it's a great series. Village is fresh on our minds because we just finished it, so it was a good kind of first foray into the 8-Bit Suplex Video Game Review Podcast. I think, to talk about this series, to talk about this game. There's certainly more games to talk about, more games that I've finished. I've finished more games already this year, I think, than I did all of last year.
What are you playing right now?
So right now, I mentioned it briefly earlier, I'm playing through Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
That's right.
Really, if you're a fan of Ratchet and Clank, definitely check it out, or if you're just a fan of platformers in general, it's really good. And then I'm also playing through Dragon Quest 11 because I didn't play through that one. Nice. And then that's another one. Oh, and I did pick up on sale. I picked up the Square Enix Avengers game. I have mixed thoughts about it, but you know, maybe I'll hold on to that until I finish it and do a quick review with that. But
I'm staring in the face of all three Hitman games for $150 on PC because I fucked up and played. I have the first Hitman on PS4.
Right.
I've got this since December. I have this fancy new 3080 card, and I want to play everything on PC now. But I don't want to just jump right into Hitman 3 without having all of the, because the way Hitman's built, like, you can bring in all of those old maps with all the new features and graphics and stuff.
Yeah, worth noting. So you're talking about the rebooted Square Enix Hitman.
They're amazing. Yeah. I've only played the first one, and I've been meaning to get to Hitman 2. I just haven't gotten a chance. And now 3's out, and you can. But the way they built it, I don't know how much you've gone into it, but
I
the
haven't.
Way they built it is the first one was like an episodic type of thing where mm-hmm. it's like every map was like every month they put out a new map, and then by the end of the season or whatever they released the full Hitman 1 game, and 2 was done. I think 2 was basically like just the full ass, like, here's all the maps like as a game. But because they built like because they built that system like on the back end, they're able to like make all these things kind of talk to each other. Like, we're gonna be constantly adding new content and stuff. Yeah. So it's like an engine that's very like iterative. So what's cool is with this third one, with all of the new features and stuff that they've added, you can bring in all the maps from 1 and 2 and like play it as like one cohesive experience with like all of the features from 3 going.
That's pretty awesome.
Retroactively going back into 1 and 2, and yeah, if you haven't played those games, they're incredible. They're so good.
I think I have like the first episode of the first one, whatever. I think it was like a PlayStation Plus free thing that I added to my library. Right, I even if I'm not interested in the game right then, I'll add it from the library because I'm always going to have PlayStation Plus. So I definitely, at some point, I'm going to definitely get into those.
Yeah. And, now's the, because they've changed publishers and distribution models and stuff, like between 1 and 2, I think they were, it was a Square Eidos game, and now it's, I think it's on just, I don't even know. I think they're self-published now. Like, so like because of that, there's all this weird licensing stuff, and it's difficult. Like, they own the rights to all the IP, but because like you can get 1 on Steam. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, you can get 1 and 2 on Steam, but not 3. So it's like weird.
It is. IO Interactive is who is the developer, and they did publish 3. So I believe 2 was published by Square Enix.
That sounds right. Yeah.
No, actually, but sorry, it's Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment.
Warner, okay. So yeah, like because of that, like all of, and because like it's every, so like the long and short of it is, yeah. if I had bought this on, if I was doing this on console, I could get the first game probably like dirt, the first two games like dirt cheap, and then just buy 3 and they would all work together,
right?
Because you have like the physical discs. Because I'm doing it all on PC, they've artificially like jacked up all the prices on on all 3 games. So you, if you want to do that, if you want, like I could get it on Steam for like $10, but it wouldn't work with 3 because it's different. It's a mess. But
well, Jamie, maybe what we need to do is you and I need to play some Hitman, and we'll get back on maybe do another maybe we'll throw together an 8-bit suplex stream of playing Hitman, or you know, at the very least,
it's a great game to stream.
Do a review pod at some point of the Hitman series. But yeah, I mean, that's that kind of puts a button on what we're talking about today. You know, tune in next time. And Jamie, anytime you finish a game you want to talk about it, let's hop on.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to get to Metal Gear at some point. That's got to be in the list.
That
we might need a few episodes.
I was going to say we might need to do a multi-part breakdown on Metal Gear. I will point out that Metal Gear 5, I think, is on extreme sale right now. On the PlayStation Store for like $9. So it might be worth
going back to revisit that. You need to get James in for Metal Gear Solid 1.
I'm in, James always has an open door. He hasn't used it yet. That's a topic for another time, but yeah, whenever you want to pick up the sticks on anything, you know, just give a holler and you know, we'll see you next time here on the 8-Bit Suplex podcast as part of the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all of our shows, including Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, One Nation Radio, The Great Match Generator, Grave Consequences, and I think we got a couple others that are on break, but definitely make sure that you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/socialsuplex and pick up your favorite podcast shirt today. Jamie, you have any social media plugs, anything you want to throw out?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Sounds good. Follow us on Twitter at 8-Bit Suplex. Follow the Social Suplex Podcast Network at Social Suplex. And until next time, I guess, hit that continue button.
Thank you for listening to the 8-Bit Suplex Podcast. See you next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.